Welcome to the Right Now Mastermind class for April 2011. I'm delighted to welcome our guest, Wade Rouse. Before I get to introducing him, as people are still showing up, I want to just give you some headlines coming up. In May, we're going to have Kelly James Inger talking about six-figure freelancing. In June, we'll have a guest, and I'm not sure quite who yet, talking about self-publishing. And in July, I have the author of the new book, Shame the Devil, coming to talk about writing historical fiction. So we have some great calls coming up, and today's call is no exception. Our guest is Wade Rouse, and he's here to talk about how he got to be the award-winning author of four critically acclaimed memoirs, including America's Boy, Confessions of a Prep School Mommy Handler, the best-selling, at least in the city, Someone Would Hear Me Scream, and the brand-new book, It's All Relative, a memoir of two families, three dogs, 34 holidays, and 50 boxes of wine, which I read over the weekend and found to be phenomenally great and funny.
You're welcome.
Pardon?
Good timing with Easter, too.
I know. It was like Easter and Earth Day on Friday and Arbor Day is coming up, so it just fit with everything. If you want a link to Wade's website and his upcoming workshops in Michigan and elsewhere, check out my blog at rightnowcoach.com. I've linked to his website, and you can get all the details on that stuff now. So let's start by asking the big question, Wade. How did you get started writing?
That is the big question. I actually started writing very early, and this is a story I tell a lot of writers and that I cover in my first memoir, America's Boy. But when I grew up in rural Missouri in a tiny, tiny Ozarks town, and during middle school, one of my, of many, most disastrous mistakes was I sang Delta Dawn at a middle school talent contest, and which, you know, a boy in the Ozarks shouldn't do, and I was quite literally booed off stage. And my mother, at the very end of the recital, was waiting for me, and she gave me two things. She gave me a writing journal, and she gave me a copy of Irma Bombeck's book, At Wit's End. And she had written in Irma Bombeck's book, "You will need both of these to make sense of your world." And I kept both of those things, I still have them, and they're really inspiration pieces. And that, from that point on, I really started journaling kind of in the context of Irma Bombeck by writing humorously about what was going around me. So I started recording my family and all of our, you know, our pseudo-insanity, I think that all families go through from a very early point. And in fact, one of the first things I wrote was, or I started taking notes on, was the Easter essay that actually finally appears in my new book, It's All Relative, because my father, as you well know now, used to bury our Easter eggs. He was a fresh-era guy, and an engineer thought it was too easy for kids to wake up and find their eggs at the end of a bed. So he would go out and bury our eggs and give my brother and myself maps to go locate them, thinking that was a more fun challenge. So that was one of the first things that I started writing when I was young. And that's one thing I've always done my entire life. I majored, you know, I worked on my high school newspaper. I majored in communications and journalism in college. I have my master's degree in journalism from Northwestern. And I worked as a reporter starting out in my career before I disastrously changed to public relations. But I've always been writing and, you know, really trying to capture what's going on around me, kind of like a journalist would.
And then how did you, like, leave the public relations, your disaster period, as you refer to it, to start writing books and specifically memoirs? How did that transition work for you?
It was, you know, that was one of the most difficult but inspiring times in my life. And my second memoir, Confessions of a Prep School Mommy Handler, I worked at an elite prep school and was the PR director, but largely, as I write in the book, much of my job was to kind of keep what I called these mean mommies, very wealthy mothers, happy and kind of out of the school's hair. And it really took a huge toll on me. I really felt like I had taken that job you know, after not fitting in high school and in junior high and grade school, that this was my chance to kind of fit in again. So I kind of submarined my self-esteem, you know, to make money and to feel that I was actually kind of a mover and shaker in larger, richer society. And at that point, it was a point in which I was very unhappy professionally. And I started, during my tenure, really writing all of these stories from my youth and all of these things that were happening around me at the school. And I wanted to get out of that job, and I started applying for a lot of other positions. And I remember my partner, Gary, who I write a lot about in the books, said to me, "Why are you doing this? Why don't you just write? That's all you've ever dreamed of doing." And it was probably the most simplistic, simple statement I'd ever heard, but one that resonated the most. And I was like, well, why haven't I? And that kind of was a turning point for me, where I sat down. I started getting up every morning before work about 4 or 4:30 in the morning, and I would write for 2 hours at least in the pitch black all of these stories, which kind of became my first and second memoir. I was kind of working on them simultaneously. And everything really kind of started to just felt like an avalanche of emotion. I mean, I couldn't contain it, and I was writing, you know, 2 hours before work. I was then coming home at lunch when I had a chance and writing. I was coming home at night and writing, and it wouldn't stop. And, you know, for me, what I always, the hard piece of all of that was that I initially started writing everything as fiction because I was so scared to tell my true story. And my partner actually stole my work at one point, about 3 or 4 months in, which is a writer's worst nightmare. And he gave it back to me, and he said, "This sounds nothing like you. If I were talking to you, this sounds nothing like I would ever hear you say." And that, again, was like a punch in the stomach. And I remember visiting my parents' cabin, which I write a lot about in my first memoir, and I put my legs in a creek. We had this old log cabin. And I put my legs in the creek and started writing what would eventually be the first chapter of my first memoir. And, you know, that's when I was saying everything was really started flowing, and I just couldn't stop from that point forward.
Wow. So I want to turn a little bit towards craft. I love memoirs. I've been reading memoirs for many years, and I think there are certain qualities that make a memoir good and different and accessible to the ordinary reader, as opposed to just a nice family story that you might write for your grandchildren or your kids or your partner.
Right.
So what do you think, what kind of qualities do you think a memoir needs to have that kind of accessibility and interest to a broader audience?
That's a great question. I think, first of all, you have to, in a memoir, write about universal topics. You know, it could be, I think we kind of all write about the same things, you know, love and family and loss and work and kids. I think you have to write about those universal topics, but do it in a highly unique way. For me, that's humor. I use humor. I grew up with a funny family. It's been my self-defense mechanism my whole life. It's the way I make sense of the world. So for me, that's how I skew everything through my rather bizarre sense of humor and how I look at the world. I also think that you need to write. I was looking at your website, and one of your favorite writers is one of mine, is Anne Lamott.
Mm.
And Anne Lamott, and I teach a lot of writing workshops, and one of her greatest bits of advice, but one of the most difficult things, is to write, she says, to write as if your parents are dead. And she doesn't mean that, of course, literally, but she means that until you get comfortable telling that deepest secret and that deepest truth, then nothing will ever be honest. And I think readers are incredibly smart, and they know when you're digging, they know when you're really trying to tell those things that mean the most to you. And I think that's really one of the things that separates you know, kind of what you're talking about is just kind of getting a story out versus, you know, really accessible and deeply personal memoir. And I don't think they have to be huge, you know, I was raised by a wolf and, you know, in New Mexico. I think that all of those kind of simple personal stories told beautifully are really what resonate with all of us. So I think that's, and I think you have to, no matter what you write, you have to have that unique voice, you know, that voice in your head that separates you from everybody else. That's what has to come out, that ability to tell the story in your uniquely personal way.
That's great. I love that. So, you know, when it came time to kind of putting together your memoir, there's always the question of how do you decide what stories to include and what to leave out? I mean, I think as a reader, we kind of want to read just the good parts, not the...
Exactly.
And I don't mean the good parts as in, you know, just the happy ones. I mean the good parts and the stuff that's interesting as opposed to the, well, you know, it took me 6 hours to pick out my clothes thing.
So, exactly, yeah.
So tell us how you make those kinds of decisions. How do you know? How do you teach your gut to get a sense of that?
For me, the easiest part for me is writing the book. I write usually fairly quickly and obsessively and at great length. So what's interesting is I usually will write 400 pages for a book. And I never look at page count, never think about what I'm writing. I go until I feel I have everything out. The most difficult part for me, and I think for a lot of writers, is that editing part. So if it takes me 8 months to write a book, it will take me at least 6 to 8 months to edit what I've written. And what I try to do is, you know, my memoirs are arranged into fairly short chapters. That's the way I've always written. I think it's part of my journalistic past. I'm a fast reader. I like quick reads. And so I usually will have 15 to 18 page chapters that I really work to get down to those 5 to 8 pages, because I think when you write humor and you write memoir, everything has to be incredibly impactful and you have to keep the story moving along quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And funny's very hard. I think funny's as hard as dramatic, and I think humorous writers kind of get the short end of the stick sometimes, because a joke or something that will make most people laugh is difficult, because you can tell a joke to one half of a room and they won't laugh and the other half will die. So it's, I think what I try and do is edit it down so that it's so quick and so impactful and so punchy that it keeps everything moving along. But it's hard. I leave a lot out. You know, if a book's 280 pages or 300, I've left 100 to 120 pages out of the book, which is a huge chunk. And, you know, I look at what keeps the story moving forward. What, as you said, you know, I went to the store and it took me 3 hours and I got stuck in traffic. What keeps that pace moving along, and what is so integral to the story it can't be left out? And I read everything over and over, and then one of my big things is I read it out loud to my partner now. I usually read it out loud to my dogs. And I think reading it out loud kind of changes how everything sounds and what's important, and kind of where, even as an author, you might get bored in the middle of a chapter. And that's always a signal for me to note it and edit it out later.
Yeah, good point. But, you know, you talked a little bit about your writing process. You said you used to get up at 4:30 in the morning to write. Do you want to say a little bit about how it goes, like beginning to end with a memoir? Like, when do you write, and then how long does it take you to write a memoir? How long does it take you to edit it? How long till it goes out for publication? You know?
It varies a lot. I always say first-time authors are a little more blessed when they're published, because they've had an infinite amount of time to work on that first book. That's sometimes when critics go, gosh, why wasn't your second book as good? But when you have a book contract and you have kind of future books and deadlines, everything gets really, you know, that schedule gets tightened. So whereas you might have had 2 years before, you're down to, you know, a year and a half. But typically, I can write a book in about, I would say, 6 to 8 months, and that's working, getting up usually about 6 in the morning, and I work 5 to 6 hours during the day on that, and then the rest of the day is kind of devoted to the business end of writing. You know, columns and freelancing and radio interviews and blogs and things like that. And then I will take anywhere from, if I have the time, at least another 6 months to edit that work, because that's really one of the most important things to me. And then when a book is sold to a publisher, I'm working right now. I have two books, one book that's out now, that my memoirs are through Random House, and I have an anthology that's coming out through Penguin. And those, the editor and publisher will put that on a list, and usually it's a year-ish after you write it, and it sells before it comes out. So it's a long period in kind of getting a book out, but you know, that gives you time really to start working on your next one. So I always have a couple of projects going on. And for me, I never start at the beginning of a memoir to go to the end. I never work chronologically. I write every day what inspires me as part of that book. And then I will go back. I'm kind of what I call a puzzle piece writer. I will go back and then fit those essays into a context that I think has the most impact. And all of my books are arranged very differently. My first memoir, America's Boy, goes chronologically from, you know, when I was born to about the age of 30. Confession of a Prep School Mommy Handler is broken into one school year, a fall and spring semester, and at least in the city, someone would hear me scream, is divided into 10 life lessons that were taken from Walden that I kind of humorously poke fun at when we moved from the city to the woods of Michigan. This book is organized around holidays. So I start writing, and then usually there will be a context and a way to organize it that makes sense to me, that's narratively interesting, and I think the best way to tell the story. But they're all different. Every memoir I write is totally different.
Wow. Well, and I want to move to something you mentioned earlier, which is Anne Lamott, who talks about, you know, write as though your parents are dead. I was flipping through the TV the other night and watched Ashley Judd's, you know, mother with her head in her hand saying, oh, I feel destroyed by what Ashley wrote in this memoir. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, how does a memoir writer write about difficult personal issues without hurting their family members? I mean, if your family members are alive, at some point you got to like wake up and say, well, golly, I should let them know this is coming out.
Exactly.
They see it on the tabloids. How do you do that?
It's actually one of the most difficult things to do as a memoirist. And for me, you know, I go back to my first book and me trying to write it as fiction, because I was so petrified of what my family would think and what those that I most loved would, how they would react to the book I had written. And, you know, one of the things I talk most about in my writing seminars is this fear. I just think that so many Americans are paralyzed by their fear in life. There are insecurities. And then when you're a writer, that's doubly so. You're kind of doubly damned. And you sit down and you have all of this fear kind of sitting on your back like this ghost. And how do you rid it to write really what you think is the most, you know, most impactful story, the story that you want to tell? And for me, my first memoir was about growing up gay in the Missouri Ozarks. And my parents and grandparents really not knowing what to do with me. And that was impacted by the death of my older brother right after he graduated high school and just as I was entering high school. And when I saw the pain that my parents went through, I kind of decided to bury my own happiness along with my brother. And I went on this 20-year journey of kind of destroying myself, and I became very overweight. I got up to nearly 260 pounds, and I'm a small guy. And all of that pain is what I wanted to tell. And the story that I wrote was kind of horrifying about our family, because we loved each other greatly, but we didn't know how to cross that line and kind of come through. And that's what I wanted to cover in my book. So I actually ended up, as I was writing the book, I didn't even know if it would be published, obviously. You're kind of just, as I said, it was just, I was getting everything out. And in very short order, you know, I studied how to get a, how to write a query letter and get agents. And I remember it was New Year's Day that I sent off 15 query letters, and within a week I had 7 offers to see the full manuscript, and about 4 days later I had 3 formal offers of representation. So in very short order, I had a book, and the agent I chose sold the book within less than a week. And so I had to kind of come clean with my parents, and I had a very honest conversation, because the book dealt with a lot of secrets, and they still lived in this very small town, and everybody was going to know all of my feelings and what occurred. And my mother, I showed my mother the manuscript, and my mother was not upset about, and I believe in kind of letting people in on knowing what is going to occur. You have to, even if you're not going to let them read everything, you have to be kind of clear on what you're going to cover. It's always what I've always done. And with my mother, she read it and she wasn't upset with any secret that I talked about. You know, like there's a period of about 1.5 years where my father didn't speak to me during our lives when I came out to him, and how difficult that was. And the only thing my mother was upset about was the way I depicted her, because she had this very heavy Southern accent and she walked like a turkey, which everyone around her knew she did, but her seeing that in print was what she was upset about. And that was hard. That was really hard. She read it at Thanksgiving, and the book was coming out in April, and she didn't really talk to me much over Thanksgiving. And my aunt actually ended up reading the manuscript too, and she was so moved that she kind of broke down at Thanksgiving dinner and told my mother how proud she was of it. And that's kind of when my mother started coming around, and I started sharing the letters and, you know, emails I got with my mom, and kind of how she ended up being fairly, though I was brutally honest, my mother was very heroic in the book, and that kind of turned her around. But it's still, no matter what you write as a memoirist, you grapple with that every single book, because, you know, I wrote Then Again in my second book about people I worked with. My third book was about my neighbors, and largely my fourth book, again, was about my family, and my partner of 15 years is dead center in all of them. And, you know, even in this last one, I write, you know, largely about him quitting drinking and his struggles with that. And so I believe that you have to be sensitive, but you also have to be honest and sharing. I don't think it should come as a surprise to those that you're writing about, even though it will, you still have to kind of level it out with them.
And, you know, just a follow-up on that, how did you deal with your coworkers and, you know, the people you worked with in your second book? Do you go talk to all of them? Do you ask them to sign a release because you're writing about them? Or you just say, well, you know, it's my story. I can write it the way I want it.
You know, it's a great question. And my second book was actually, despite, you know, writing in the others largely about my family, the second was largely about people I worked with and the work environment. And the difficulty in that was that legally, and working with my publisher, it was the hardest book to vet, because the school was very well endowed. It had the power and the backing to really go after me. And for me, that was the bravest book I've written, because I felt such an obligation to tell my story and talk about self-esteem and what I went through and how people act, especially how people who I always admired and thought had everything really had less than I did when you look at their lives. But it was incredibly difficult, because the publisher went through an expansive vetting process. We changed the name of the school. We really tried to change characters. You know, I made very clear in all of my books, if I change anything, I really feel as a memoirist, if there's anything changed, there should be a note. And I'm one of the few memoirists that will put their author's notes directly in the front of a book, and not hide it. And with that book, since things were changed because we had to, I made that a very large, you know, author's note up front. But that book was difficult because when I returned to that city for a book event, the front page of the daily paper was about my book. And it wasn't a review, but it was an in-depth investigative article on whether I was telling the truth about what occurred.
Wow.
So it was splashed for, you know, about 500,000 readers to see. And I was, you know, I felt, of everything, that's where my journalistic background came into play, because I felt incredibly vindicated because everyone interviewed at the school supported me in what I had written. And felt very strongly that I had the right to tell it, even though it wasn't the kindest reflection on them. So that was a difficult book just because of the legal vetting process that I went through. But I learned a lot, and I learned that it's still okay to tell your story.
Wow. Well, and let's follow up on this again, because, you know, this is in the news because of Three Cups of Tea and all this kind of criticism of Greg Mortensen, and several years ago it was James Frey and A Million Little Pieces. And I think, you know, as I work with writers as a writing coach and as I read memoirs and I read articles about writing memoirs, one of the questions is, you know, are you getting the details and dialogue in your memoir historically correct, or are you paying attention to your subjective truth? Or are you doing some sort of literary artistic thing in the middle of those two? How do you deal with that difference between what really happened and your subjective truth? And then I throw in there, you know, what sounds good.
Exactly.
You know, or what sounds funny, or whatever, depending on what you're going for as a writer.
That's, I think, kind of the biggest question that we're asked, not only by readers, but also by editors and publishers today. I mean, I guess I'm always a little bit surprised that these things continue to happen, because if you think you just turn in a memoir and it's kind of just put out to press immediately, it's not. I mean, there are lots of questions asked. There are lots, I think, of external digging that goes on before, you know, a memoir is kind of put out to the people. What I try to do, I think, is honestly cover all of those things that you just said. For me, I'm first and foremost a journalist, so I've always taken notes. So, for instance, if I write about the holidays, I have 1,000 pages of notes from my life of what occurred, and I was always writing. So if Thanksgiving dinner was going on, I either had a notebook beside me or a laptop and was taking notes, or I had a voice recorder. And at many points, I often give those over to my agent or to my publisher should they kind of want to seek some background regarding that. But I think you have to understand that there is some artistic license that goes on in memoirs, largely through the voice. For instance, in every memoir I write, I pare down a lot on the dialogue, unless it's occurring between myself and my partner, and kind of repaint the scene that occurred. And most of the dialogue that occurs are largely funny lines from, for instance, my mother and my father, who are complete characters. But I always get a little bit leery, unless I've written down, when I read a memoir and there's 4 pages of dialogue, because that's very hard to get accurate and word by word. But I think you do cover, I think you can't invent anything in a memoir. I mean, you can't, for instance, say that you spent 3 months in jail when you were there for an hour.
Yeah.
You cannot do that. But I think what happens is, for instance, in my memoirs, is my perspective on the situation, what's occurring, is largely what I'm telling. So you're not getting a biography in a memoir. You're not getting 4 different points of view. You're getting the writer's view about what is occurring. But that, what occurred, better damn well have happened. But what you're writing about can be skewed from your own bizarre sense of humor, in my instance. You know, it's hard because I always say, if you go to Thanksgiving dinner and you ask, the 10 people at the table to write about their day and what's occurring, you will get 10 completely different stories. But the accurate point is everyone sat down to dinner. That must be true. The event that occurred must be true, but how you tell it, and, you know, like my wicked sense of humor, I would talk about, you know, my dad drinking the box of wine and my mother, you know, trying to have four pots of Folgers. Those are the details that I bring humorously that I think kind of set it apart. I also have a problem, and I've talked a lot about this in memoirs, where people, I would say in my reviews of my work, I am occasionally unlikable with my sense of humor because I can be brutal about those around me and those I love, but I'm also brutal about myself. But what I don't ever try to do is make myself out to be a brand or a character, and I think too many memoirists do that. They make themselves out to be more heroic than they are, or they make themselves out to be more badass than they really are. And I think that's really where you get into trouble. My whole reason I write memoir is because I think everybody, all of us, especially writers, have this invisible finish line in the future. And we're good people and we're bad people all mixed into one. But what we want to do is try to improve ourselves and our lives and be better people. So we take three huge steps forward one day, and the next we take two giant steps back. But we're always trying to get to that our own personal finish line in the future. And that's what I write. My memoirs don't sum me up to be heroic in 300 pages because we all make giant steps forward and then we all kind of screw up and fall back. And that's what I try to demonstrate of those kind of minute moments of life where we succeed and where we fail. And I think too many memoirs today get into trouble because they try to make themselves be complete heroes or complete, you know, as I said, badasses, and nobody's like that. We're just people.
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of the people on the call are here because they have thought, you know, there's a story I want to tell about my life. So what advice would you give to them, to those of us who are thinking, wow, I'd like to start writing my memoir, but I just don't know, you know, what to do?
For me, I always say, write what inspires you. If you're trying to write Twilight or Harry Potter just because you think it's going to sell and make you money and be a huge hit, you're going to fail. I mean, I think unless that is what drives you, I think you have to sit down and whatever is speaking to you, whatever is just yearning to get out, that's what you have to start writing. And with memoir, just don't edit yourself in the beginning. Just get it out. And I think really write with that voice that's banging around in your head. We all have this unique voice. And if you try and write in a persona that's other than yourself and who you really are, it's going to come out stilted and fake and false. So you have to sit down and really just mine that advice, but just start writing. That's the biggest thing, too.
Yeah, and I want to follow up on that because I'm curious about this thing of voice. I mean, I know that, you know, with your books, I hear a real clear sense of voice. That's what I get with Anne Lamott. Some of the other books that I mentioned on the site, like I Had Brain Surgery, What's Your Excuse? Susie Becker has a great sense of voice. What are some things that a writer can do to really hone their voice? I think you'd mentioned before reading out loud to your dog or to your partner.
Yeah.
What are some other things that kind of help us know, okay, this is me, I'm on key here, or, I'm off key, this is not me?
I think that's one of the most important questions, because if you look at what any writer or any editor or publisher, when they buy a book, what they say, why they bought it, or what they were looking for, they always say a voice, a unique voice. Because, as I said earlier, there's only so many things that we can write about. You know, we're all going to, Shakespeare wrote about it, Chelsea Handler is writing about love and sex and family. It's just how you write about it that really sets it apart. For me, I think you have to be a huge reader. I read everything. I read memoir. I read chick lit. I read historical fiction. I read biography. Any sort of genre, I really, when I'm between books, I will suck down 10 at a time. And I think that really gives you a clear, I think a great writer has to be a great reader, because it you get a real idea of what is setting these books apart and what's making them successful. I think, and in addition to books, I read screenplays. I think screenplays are kind of an incredible juxtaposition against fiction and memoir, because they're reliant totally on dialogue to move the story forward. So it's kind of a fascinating, you know, juxtaposition on how an author works. I also, I believe that you write voluminously. You get as much down as you can, and the more you write, the more that voice appears. Because I think everybody, I think new writers, emerging writers, often sit down with a lot of baggage. They can be good writers, but one, they're either going to be a business writer, they're going to be a technical writer, they're going to be a public relations person, they're going to be a journalist. And I think you kind of have to, the more you write personally, you kind of slough off those backpacks and kind of achieve your own voice. For me, it was my fear made me write fiction until Gary looked at what I'd written and kind of gave me the punch in the face. And that's when I kind of, I'd read so many books that humor doesn't sell and humor doesn't, people can't relate to it. And that's when I sat back down and said, my God, if I can't write humor and I want to be a humorist, I need to stick to PR or go back to being a journalist. And so the more I wrote, the more it evolved, and the more the pace evolved, and the more my humor, the way I kind of talk in real life and relate to people, really came out on paper. And it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to pinpoint, but when you get it right and you know it, things flow. I don't even think about writing anymore. I just write, if that makes sense.
Yep, that does. Thank you. Go ahead.
And you know, and we sit down with so many rules as writers too. We sit down from high school and college and work, and we want everything polished. And I know a lot of writers that start out that will write a paragraph and then obsess over that paragraph. And I think if that works for you, that's okay. But for me, I don't ever edit from the beginning. I mean, I will have so many copy edit screw ups and misspellings in the beginning, but I just get it out, and I'll look back, and I'm like, my God, I have 5 pages of breathless, great stuff to work with. And that's what I encourage people to do.
That's very helpful. Thank you. One of the questions that I think all of us who are writers, and from those just starting out to those who published, is this question of platform and publicity. And I'm curious, you know, you've become a best-selling memoir writer. What helped you to get publicity and sell books as a memoir writer? What kind of work did you do to make that happen?
Well, good question. One of the things that drives me out of my gourd is that publishers and editors are so obsessed with saying that you have to have a platform first. Well, you know, that's the way publishing is today. If you're a reality TV star and 10 million people know who you are, largely you're going to get a book deal. Does it irk the crap out of me? Yes, it does. But that's the way it is. They want you to be noticed. They want you to have name recognition because you're going to sell more books. But I always say never let that daunt anyone, because if you write a damn good book, it's going to be published. So just let that be kind of your guiding principle. But that said, I do everything. For me, I think, you know, I always say every published writer starts off as an unpublished writer, and people don't typically know who you are. And it's always an ongoing battle. For me, what I started doing was I wrote my books, and then I really tried to ramp up my platform as best I can. So I have a blog. I do voluminous outreach on Twitter and Facebook. I I hope that I do great outreach with other authors. Female authors are tend to be incredibly kind human beings as well. And so there are memoirists like Jen Lancaster, who is a New York Times bestseller, and she writes very funny stuff. She has her first novel coming out next month. And she's been very kind to me and kind of, you know, cross-references me in all of her blogs. And she has a huge following. I also am tireless in the type of freelance work that I try to do that I feel will get my name out there. And you just have to keep hammering. I always say that, you know, 6 hours a day is writing and the other 6 to 8 is continuing to build your platform and do outreach. So for me, I'm a columnist for a magazine called Metro Source out of New York and L.A., and it's a great lifestyle publication, and I write a humor column for it, and I'm now a regular contributor to Michigan Public Radio, and I'm doing essays for them. So, you know, anything that you can do that builds your platform, you have to do, because that gets you more reader recognition, you know, it's more viral. All of the dots begin to get connected. And, you know, one of the other things I wanted to do was really continue to brand myself as a humorist. And my next, I have a humorous dog anthology out in September, and it's called I'm Not the Biggest Bitch in This Relationship. And proceeds are benefiting the Humane Society. But I worked with 21 best-selling writers and humorists, like Jane Green and Beth Harbison, and Rita Mae Brown, Bruce Cameron, Jen Lancaster, Lori Nataro, and Chelsea Handler and her dog wrote the foreword for the book. So I just think I work this hard at every other job, and I work 4 times as hard for myself, and that's what you got to do.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I want to open it up to calls from our listeners, or questions from our listeners. So if anybody's on the line and muted, you need to unmute yourself with *7. If you have any questions, Wade is here to answer your memoir writing questions. Wade, we typically have a quiet group, so if nobody asks questions, don't be offended. They're probably busy taking notes or in their cubicle at lunch. So, group, anybody have a question?
Hi, this is Beth in Wisconsin. Thank you so much for coming and sharing with us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
I remember reading a book, and the first 2 chapters ended rather sadly, and I was really angry because I don't read that author to feel sad. And
yeah.
I said, I want it to be okay that I'm married and a mother and I have a job, and all of a sudden it hit me. I want it to be okay, other people also want their situations to be okay.
Right.
And that was a huge revelation to me. It started because it was an author that I knew and liked who had done something that was not what I expected.
And that's always shocking when a reader and a fan read something and it shocks them. It's a hard, I think writers always kind of want to push their own boundaries, and that can be very difficult. But I think you're right. I think, you know, one of the main reasons I wrote is because you hit it on the head. I wanted to feel okay, and I wanted other people reading my work to feel, I mean, that's a great way to put it. I wanted them to feel okay about themselves and their life, and that's the main reason one of the main reasons I write. Now, I'm not always easy on myself or other people, but I do, that's it. I do want I want everybody to feel okay, that it is okay. Life isn't easy, and
right.
I think people need to understand that, and for me, you know, humor has been the greatest common denominator, no matter how different we all are and what kind of lifts us up and shakes us out of our doldrums and makes us happy. And that's what I hope to do. But it's interesting. You're right. I think you've hit why a lot of memoirists write what they do.
Seth, did you have a follow-up question to that?
No, just a thank you very much for letting it be okay that I had that kind of feeling.
No, yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's, you know, it's interesting in a lot of my writing, people will start out going, this guy is sometimes not so nice. But the point is, I'm just trying to be honest with how I feel. That me, by the end, the point of most of my memoirs is, I think we're all learning something about ourselves as we move through life, and that's what I'm trying to convey is that we're all still learning and bettering ourselves as we go through, but it's not always easy. Life ain't easy.
That's for sure. Thanks, Beth. Other questions from our listeners? I could see you all out there chewing, thinking about your next book.
And I'm nice, so any questions, I don't bite even over the phone.
He won't, and he does give away Barbie dolls, although I didn't win a Barbie doll at the last book signing, so I'm a little sad.
I'm so sorry. There will be others.
That's right. And the person who won was very happy. It was his first Barbie doll, so I was happy.
That's true, and probably his last.
Maybe. Yes, I have a big stash of Barbies, both in my daughter's room and at my mother's house, waiting for me to come back and claim them.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing. It's the Barbie essay in this memoir. I really enjoyed writing about our obsessions.
Well, I adore Barbie, and as I think I told you, we have a Ken doll that frequently dresses like a girl at our house because we have no Ken doll clothes. So she's always wearing a tutu, bare-chested with a tutu. Walking around the house, we find him in surprising places, and he hangs out. We have one Ken doll and about 30 Barbies.
Love it.
Yeah.
You have a great question on here about, and I talked a little bit about it, and it's a prime piece of a lot of the writing seminars that I do, is getting an agent and getting published. And one of the reasons that I do the writing workshops is that when I first started out, there were a number of authors that I admired, and I reached out to them as I was finishing my first memoir, and before I actually started writing my query letter or reaching out to literary agents. And of those 10 authors I reached out to that I admired, I got zero response.
Wow.
And it was one of those points where I was so broken for about a week that I almost let it stop me, and there was a point in which I thought to myself, I remember going out and I got a Starbucks at lunch and was just sitting outside at this park, and I thought, why would I let that stop me? They have nothing to do with me, no control over my life. And I actually said at that moment, if I had some modicum of success, I would try and give back to other writers, because I think what we're all looking for is just, and Beth said it, is that it's going to be okay. Just keep going. That's fine. You really can't plan that road that's ahead of you. All you can do is write and write your story and let things unfold. And so for me, that's, you know, I know you've got links. I've got a great writing workshop in this great resort town where we live, Saugatuck, Michigan, May 12th through the 15th. And that's one of the things I talk about, is not letting fear stop you, just letting your story unfold. And that's what I think the biggest thing is just to keep going. And that's what I want to convey to other writers.
That's helpful. Thank you. And I do want to remind our listeners that I have links to Wade's books at my website, rightnowcoach.com, on the blog. I also have a link to Wade's website, and on the homepage of his website, you'll find links to his events. He's got one coming up in Michigan. I know there are others coming up this summer and into 2012.
Yeah.
So go ahead and explore that, and certainly I'll be letting you know as Wade's events get closer, what's coming up. Wade, do you have a final tip you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I really appreciate you having me on, and I just think that we all, as writers, are writing for a reason. And the most important thing is to start and to keep writing and to get your story down there and not to feel, I think writers need to be told that it's okay to write, that it's not silly, it's not goofy. I think if you are driven to write, it's a vital important of your makeup and of your spirit and the reason that you're here and a gift that you've been given, and you truly need to share that, even if it's for yourself starting out as journaling. But it's vital that you start, that you keep writing, and that you do it. And I hope everyone gets that message. It's not goofy. It's not silly. It's vitally important, because really what you're doing is changing yourself and changing others' lives. And I just hope people stay at it.
That's great. Thank you. Wade, it's been a delight to have this conversation with you. You're welcome. And I remind everybody to check out my website, rightnowcoach.com, for a link to Wade's website and Wade's books. Check them out. You will laugh out loud, and your kids will say to you, or your family will say to you, "What's so funny? Why are you laughing in the middle of the living room on a Sunday?"
That's the biggest compliment. If people spit up anything, I've noticed I've succeeded.
Yeah, well, there you go. You had me laughing on Barbie and Arbor Day and a whole bunch of things. So,
good.
Thanks, Wade. And Right Now Coach Mastermind class members, we'll see you next month when we talk with Kelly James Anger about six-figure freelancing. Take care and happy writing. Bye, everyone.